From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. Throughout history, African-American alcohol consumption has been portrayed as derelict, writes food journalist and historian Toni Tipton Martin. She spent two decades buying and studying recipe collections for her award-winning book, The Jemima Code, and its follow-up, Jubilee. In her latest work, Toni turns to African-American mixology, ensuring that those behind tradition and innovation are not forgotten. Hi, Toni.
Hi.
I love this book. It has so much exuberance.
I had so much fun working on this book.
Oh, I'm sure you can feel it. Can you share your early memories of your parents' hospitality and your father's makeshift bar?
Yeah, you know, my family was part of that generation where backyard barbecues and entertaining and picnics, that was just classic summer activities. Plus my family, my parents were club members, so they often had friends over for parties. And my mom used to love to set up this lavish buffet in our basement. And my dad built himself a really cool bar. Initially, that bar was made from my grandmother's hideaway bed. It was very cool. It was this, I can just remember it, I was only about 6 years old, but it had Asian etching on the outside of it. And it basically looked like a box that had a fold-out twin bed inside. But when you opened it, the top doors above the bed, which is a kind of peculiar combination when you think about it, but the top of it was a bar. And she kept her glassware in there. And this amazing little Popeye decanter that I was in love with as a child. And so when they kind of outgrew that, maybe it was falling apart, I'm not exactly sure, but my dad built his own bar and began collecting different things from around the country when they would travel.
Can you talk about the mixed messaging that surrounds Black people and booze?
Yeah, you know, it's been really interesting, and I'm still able to see the pervasiveness of this today. For the longest time, perhaps since freedom, African Americans were portrayed in literature, in television, in film, like in every piece of pop culture. We were portrayed as people who were, the men were going to be dangerous and violent if they were caught drinking, and the women who drank were considered loose and wild. And those kind of stereotypes percolate all throughout our history, up to and including the years preceding Prohibition, when it's not really widely known, or at least it wasn't known to me, that so much of the argument on behalf of temperance was about the danger of Black men.
Wow.
But many African Americans were also at the same time trying to establish themselves as moderate, as learned, as reliable, like all of the things that were being said about my ancestors, they were working diligently, many of them, to dispel those mythologies. And so we have this fraught relationship with public alcohol consumption.
Much of early African-American libation is rooted in innovation and creativity due to circumstance. What is the role of women and booze in the antebellum years?
Well, what's really interesting about that is when we think about making cider or beer, for example, those are two crafts that fall squarely in the realm of a woman's work. You're cooking, basically, making a mash over heat, straining it, and then applying various other processes to distill out the solids and arrive at the clearest liquid that one can find. And so African-American women have a known history that can be traced back to West Africa of making beer and also making palm wine. And both of those were libations that might be used ceremonially during funerary experiences. They could be part of hospitality rituals where a host would make sure that you were served something light before the meal. These traditions can be traced all the way back to West Africa. And what is unfortunate, and another little fact that surprised me, was how much enslavement really kind of corrupted that whole process, because what African Americans were doing in the motherland became, I don't know, maybe a source of kind of a salve for the horrors of what they were going through. And the planters would use the corn whiskeys and other things that they were making to try to soothe the pain by making sure that the enslaved had distilled beverages to drink. It's kind of a complicated story to tell.
So complicated. Who were the earliest notable mixologists that you encountered in your research? And what was the first cookbook that had tested recipes for cocktails?
Well, what's interesting about that is that most everyone refers to Tom Bullock, who published The Ideal Bartender in 1917. And that is a complete volume full of classic recipes that everyone will recognize if you have any interest in bar culture at all. And what I learned from my friend Robert Simonson was that there was a second mixologist to publish 2 years later, and his name was Julian Anderson. And his collection is very similar to Tom's in that it's classic bartender speak, right? He's got these recipes with these peculiar, some of them are funny titles, even complete with body part names. And those are the two guys that get all of the attention. But to my great surprise, even before them, there was a woman who published a cookbook of recipes, and she's the first that I've encountered to have a full chapter on beverages and mixology. And her name is Atheline Payton. She wrote a book called The Paytonia Cookbook. It's very rare. Few people know about it. I think there's only two copies of it that are known. One is at the University of Kentucky, and one is with the National Park Service. And they were gracious enough to share the pages of it with me because of its fragility. But it's so fun. It's so fun to know that a woman got there first, and she has recipes for rum punch and cherry cordials and all of the kinds of beverages that we've been talking about so far.
Let's talk about batch cocktails for a minute, which are being seen so much more often now and seem to have always been a specialty of caterers. Do you have a favorite batch or punch bowl beverage that you would suggest for the holidays?
Well, rum punch is always a favorite because it's obviously a familiar term. Everybody kind of knows rum punch if they've traveled in the Caribbean. But one of my favorite stories in the book revolves around the claret punch. And when my son, who is a bartender and was helping me with this recipe, and I put our head together about batching up some of these recipes that initially were single serving drinks in one of or another of the cookbooks, we discovered in making this by coincidence at Thanksgiving that it was delightful served prior to the Thanksgiving meal. It's got an apricot brandy. There's some tangerine liqueur in it, and it's really festive because of the sliced fruit that floats on top. So that would have to be one of my favorites.
I love that. So let's talk about eggnog for a minute. What are some of the different versions of it that you found in your research?
Yeah, so this book has several versions of eggnog, and the recipe for it, interestingly, is called Bowl of Eggnog, because that's the term that Tom used to describe it. But multiple mixologists had versions of it. There's this really cool thing called a Tom and Jerry cocktail, and it was actually made with a batter that you made a thick base of creamed eggs and sugar, and then diluted that with the spirits. It's sort of the thing that we derive eggnog from, the same kind of a foundation that has spirits layered on. But in eggnog, you tend to use cold milk rather than this paste that's mixed with boiling water. I love to talk about the Puerto Rican version of this called coquito. And it
so
gets
good.
Some tropical flavor. Yeah, it gets tropical flavor from coconut and sweetened condensed milk.
I love that. And I have to ask you about the origins of the term juke joints. Where did the phrase come from?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You know, when you're on the ground in the communities, like in the Mississippi Delta, you hear the words juke joints a lot, but you also hear other terms that were associated with gatherings in the woods, off the beaten path, primarily in agricultural communities where people had been working hard all week. And then on the weekend, they just wanted to let their hair down outside of the gaze of the sharecropping landowner. And some of those places were known to be a little bit rowdy, but others were similar to cafes where women would operate rooms from their homes where they would make really great food, mix up some moonshine, and they could serve the people in their community. There are multiple references to how we arrive at that name. There are theories. One of them is that it's connected to a West African term, juke, which can mean, you know, some disparaging things like troublemaking, that center on troublemaking. But one of the most common accepted answers is that they're tied to the juke box, and that over time, when live music was no longer happening in these spaces, the people who were partying there began to listen to music played in a box on records, and thus the term juke joint became more popular.
I would love it if you could leave us with some contemporary mixologists that you have your eye on.
Well, I am known for saying that asking me to name anybody is like asking, in whatever subject, is like asking a mom to name her favorite child. So I'm always reluctant to do that. But I will tell you that I've gone to great lengths in this book to cite every current African-American who has published recipes, who has reclaimed this legacy for themselves and for others. And I've adapted some of their recipes as an homage and an honor to them for what they've achieved in their own worlds. And so my favorites are there. You'll be able to see who I lean on and who I speak to. I will take one little point of personal privilege and say, obviously, that Tiffany Barrier, who has been a mixology mentor to me, is a cherished part of this process for me. She's known as the drinking coach, and you can follow her. Anyone can follow her online. She is involved with the Tales of the Cocktail. She's award-winning, and she recently received an honor in my name from the IACP, the International Association of Culinary Professionals. But she is not currently on staff at a bar.
Well, thank you so much, Toni. This was really fun. And once again, another just engaging and fascinating book. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was award-winning food and nutrition journalist Toni Tipton Martin. She serves as editor-in-chief of Cook's Country. Her latest work is Juke Joints, Jazz Clubs, and Juice, a cocktail recipe book. We've got a recipe for her claret punch on our website, kcrw.com/goodfood. Coming up, cocktail ice like you've never seen it before. I want to introduce you to Disco Cubes. That's next.